This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Greetings and salutations. You've successfully arrived at the Bloody Disgusting Network. The passage of time will now bring you to something strange, unique, and idiosyncratic. Have a good time.
From the leafy streets of Springwood, Ohio,
to the barred windows at 1428,
we are Halloweenies.
This is God.
And believe in my dream for me. Believe in my dream just for me, and we'll break the mold.
Happy Halloween, trick-or-treaters, dreamers, campers, suspects, and deadites. We're going to be talking to specifically you dreamers out there because I guess we're going to be dialing the clock back to season two, if you recall, our Nightmare on Elm Street season, because we're speaking to the dream demon himself, Mr. Robert Englund. You do not have to rub your eyes too much as you're looking at our main feed right now because your eyes do not deceive you. Yes, Robert Englund joined our show for a good 15 minutes, and we're going to be talking about some fun stuff. But I'm not alone on this journey. Here in Weston Hills Asylum please introduce yourself.
This is Wolfman Freddie Mac.
I mean, this is exciting. I mean, by the way, I should probably introduce myself too. This is Michael... let's just see, Kruger Rothman. Just God,
I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say Michael Weston Hills.
You know, was that my original nickname for it? Because I was trying to think.
No clue.
Well, we are in Weston Hills right now. It's been a while since we've been here. God, it's so long. I mean, it's weird to think because I guess there's some sort of symmetry here because you know we're talking to Robert Englund not because of Nightmare on Elm Street, because guess what? There is no Nightmare on Elm Street new movie coming out, you know, at least as far as we can tell, which sucks. Yeah. I mean, I think we've been wanting one for a while, but Stranger Things 4 is out, and Mr. Englund plays Victor Creel. If you haven't seen it yet, you've probably seen photos of him, especially if you follow our socials, because we've shared multiple memes involving his character, Victor Creel. He, spoiler alert, doesn't have eyes. So, might say he's probably somebody that would be actually in Weston Hills if you think about it, but what makes it so interesting, just sitting here thinking about it, is that when we did the Nightmare season in 2019, that's when Stranger Things 3 was out. So it's kind of cool.
Wow.
There's some sort of symmetry there. It's a little weird.
That is crazy to me.
Yeah,
that's been that long
that
since
long.
Stranger Things 3 and 4. Yeah. That the distance we've done. Multiple seasons,
yeah.
in that dead space.
We did Friday.
That is crazy.
The whole Friday the 13th run, we've carved out all of Camp Crystal Lake. Then we solved literally every crime we could in Woodsboro. And we also, I guess, flipped through all of the major Necronomicon pages of the Evil Dead trilogy,
right.
Or at least the Ash trilogy. That's how long it took to get to Stranger Things 4, which is kind of fucking wild when you think about it.
I mean, we also, and you're forgetting, you're burying the lead, we also did, we have our coverage on Dead Silence.
We did do our coverage on Dead Silence, which I guess if you think about it, is a kind of an Elm Street adjacent movie. And I'm just joking; it's not that at all. I'm really excited about this because we really did want to talk to Robert Englund in that season, season two. God, season two. It's so weird to say that because now we're
yeah.
on five. But we really did want to talk to him around that time, and it's actually one of the. I feel like when you look back, our Halloween season, we got to talk to John Carpenter. That was big. But we didn't really talk to anyone else from the Halloween franchise other than like Tommy Lee Wallace, because he talked a little bit about Halloween 3. But we didn't talk to Jamie Lee Curtis. We didn't talk to any other stars. I don't think we even reached out to any of the stars then. At that point, we weren't really doing that.
Yeah.
But for Nightmare, all we really got to talk to was we got to speak to Heather Langenkamp, and that was right. Great. And that's an awesome
which
interview.
Is a huge get anyways.
And absolutely but, huge.
Right.
So you can but check that out. Yeah. But this is big. This kind of just landed randomly because we've been covering the Stranger Things season over at the Losers Club with Talkin' Hawkins, and I had been trying to get the Duffer Brothers on this show, and they you know randomly said, "Hey, how would you like to talk to Robert Englund?" And duh, seriously. Yeah. But without spoiling too much, though, Mac, like, what were your sentiments on the interview? What surprised you about it?
Oh, you know. I think I'm always surprised at how incredibly nervous I get before we talk to anybody, but also just in the sense that it always surprises me how absolutely game these folks are to talk about these things, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really, it just feels nice to just, it just seems like they're excited about it. And it's just, it's fun. It's still fun after all these years. And you can tell in his voice that he's just having a great time. And I just love that. I just love to see that.
Yeah. It was really cool too, because I mean, you're not gonna be able to see it because obviously this is a podcast, but we could see in his room, he had all this Freddy merch everywhere. It was kind of as the two heads that love the merch the most on this podcast, I will say it was the most enticing thing to see is just he had this giant Freddy's pinball machine right behind him, which we talk about a little bit.
I think it was a Freddy's Nightmares pinball machine.
Didn't it look like that? Yeah, that's what I thought.
I believe so. So that was even more incredible.
Yeah, well, it was really fun. And it was just kind of surreal to be able to, you know, I've seen him in person before because honestly, actually the same weekend that I interviewed Heather Langenkamp, I went to a convention that week, that flashback, and he was there, and I just saw him in the distance. And we had also seen him at the Music Box years and years ago.
Oh, that's right.
At Caffrey, I believe. Were you there for that one? It was like a Nightmare and Swamp thing,
you know,
double feature.
We've talked about that interview so much, I feel like I was there. But
right?
I don't think I was there for that.
I think
I was there for Clive Barker, but I was
okay,
not there
yeah,
for...
Okay, yeah, the Clive Barker one was interesting too. But, yeah. Well, anyway, look, we got an interview to get to. So enjoy... It's very short. It's a little, you know, around 15 minutes. Fingers crossed, you know, we get him back on the show. We get him a little longer, maybe go in for the 45 minute hour long, the real Halloweenies interview that we get in. But for right now, it's nice. This is a fun little chat. And if we go for the full thing, hey, we could always dream on about it. Right. Enjoy. I'll jump right in. You know, with Stranger Things, the 80s is such a character. And, you know, it made me think this isn't the first dip into the 80s. 80s nostalgia has been so in vogue for over 20 years now. And I wanted to ask, you know, as someone who was such an important icon of that decade, why do you think the decade is so hard for us to leave? Like, I mean, it's just, I feel like the nostalgia just continues and continues. It just never ends.
Well, there were... The culture provided for everybody in America and the UK, the world, in fact, some really great iconic films, mm-hmm. some decent television. It was on the threshold of new technology, video, Blockbuster, mom and pop video stores, DVD, Blu-ray, MTV at its pinnacle. And things were not that expensive yet. Everybody kind of still had access to a lot of that. Even if you were sitting on the couch with that old tired Afghan blanket on the back and some lukewarm pizza on the coffee table with mom and dad or stepdad or your older brother or your older sister, and you'd all walk down to the mom and pop video store to Blockbuster together, and you get your movies for the weekend, or you went out to see the movie on a theatrical release. So we were all kind of experiencing the culture together in the 80s, whether you were in Chicago, whether you were in New York, whether you were in Mexico, Seattle, we were all kind of bouncing off of the same thing. I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, there was this moment of time with transistor radios. Mm-hmm. And in Southern California, back then, there was only one rock and roll station in the 50s, in the middle 50s. Later on, there was battles for a popularity between lots of rock stations and FM. We remember all that. But in the middle 50s, there was only one in LA. And I can remember walking down the beach with my Delaware Punch and my split weenie hot dogs, relish, chopped onions on a rye toast from the stand on the beach, and walking down in my pre-adolescence and looking at the girls in those early, early bikinis with the big bottoms on them, you know, and hardly any cleavage. And all the girls were basted in olive oil, and they all had a little turquoise plastic transistor radio propped up in the sand on a beach towel and their headbands. And everybody was listening to the same song mm-hmm. on the same station. Everybody, rich, poor, beautiful, fat, skinny, black, white. We all were listening to the same music at the same time that we were getting our first kiss or going to our first party and playing Spin the Bottle or going back into the makeout room for, you know, 7 minutes in heaven or whatever game that you lost your virginity to or popped your cherry to. And so I think that the 80s are a memory for those that came of age then from, let's say, 14 to 24 or 30, the clubs, the music, the MTV, the films, there was still a soundtrack and a movie of our lives at that time. Top Gun, Nightmare on Elm Street,
yeah,
Rambo, and the songs, you know, Depeche Mode, whatever we were listening to, that was the background music for our life then. And that's why, I think we were nicer to each other.
Oh, totally.
No, we weren't as divided. I think we were just nicer to each other. I know there was a bit of the crack cocaine epidemic beginning, but aside from that, we were still nicer to each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the source of the nostalgia. And a lot of that stuff holds up. There are remakes because of money, and there's remakes because not only were they hits back then, but we also remember the yeah. time when we go see the remake. We remember the first one. And I think that's part of the experience. And also a lot of stuff from the 80s, we've been able to hang on to longer because of technology, because of the DVDs and the CDs and MeTV and TV Guide TV and cable and reruns on cable. A lot of those movies have been finally discovered or rediscovered by a future, a new generation.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, and in that sense, how did the Duffers approach you for this season? Was it surreal to be a part of a story so indebted to the Elm Street legacy that you began 40 years ago? Like, was that, how was that? Did they mention that was going to be an aspect of the season?
I had to earn the role. I mean, I auditioned in my bathtub with my wife filming me on a phone on a toilet seat. So, and I had lost the role. I loved the show. I'm a big fan of David Harbour's. Yeah. I mean, aside from everything else, I mean, I think, you know, he stole the show in Black Widow, but he's also could be an action star. He's a big guy and he can throw a punch and you believe it, you know, and I'm a big fan of the kids. And I didn't get a role. I was up for a role in Part 3 and I didn't get it. And I don't know whether I blew the audition or they went with somebody younger or what, but I was disappointed. And they called me for season 4 and no one said Nightmare on Elm Street.
Wow.
I thought that if it was any kind of stunt casting, and this is after I got the role, it's because I was an 80s icon and because I knew that I was wearing makeup on my eyes, you know, and that I had worn makeup in Nightmare on Elm Street and Phantom of the Opera and Stephen King's The Mangler. So I sort of have, I'm the go-to guy for that. And that was one of the reasons that they thought of me, because some actors can't wear makeup. Some really good actors just can't do it. It drives them nuts. And I don't have a problem with it. So I thought it might have been one of those reasons. And also that by me guest starring, cameoing, you know, in season four, I would underline the 80s nostalgia. Okay. I have seen echoes of Nightmare on Elm Street on the show, but I also see echoes of Goonies and Amityville and E.T. And a lot of other things on the show. But I think in season four, there's some really definite and strategic Nightmare on Elm Street little Easter eggs, as well as many other, as well as a lot of other shows, as you know, too. And I the irony is, I don't think actually Victor Creel is one of those. You know, I now in my dotage here as an old fart actor, I play the old priest and the old poacher and the old scientist and the old doctor a lot. I'm the guy that tells the story. I'm the guy that you bring in to do your backstory exposition. And that's in fact one of the uses of Victor Creel in this. Is he was a witness and he is damaged and he does tell the backstory, which will help illuminate my son Henry and who he will become and how important he is to the story of Stranger Things.
Yeah. And you know, and on that note, it's kind of interesting because, you know, when you're looking at the response of this season right now, is it sort of reassuring or reaffirming to just see how far this legacy, your legacy, has like crossed over into generations? I mean, we're seeing now, you know, 10-year-olds, 15-year-olds that are first coming onto Elm Street for the first time ever. And granted, this has been going on since the 80s ended, you know, but I just, you know, as a huge horror fan, I haven't seen it this pronounced since like the early 90s. And I'm wondering with you, like, is there, what is that feeling right now? Like to know that, like, oh my God, like does it feel like the embers are kind of starting up again? You know, is the Elm Street vibes coming back for you?
You know, I'm on the road a lot for cons, and I pick and choose them. And this has been since Freddy versus Jason, 2003. What is it? 2022 now.
Yeah.
So it's been 20 years. I've been on the road off and on, and I pick and choose now. New York, San Francisco, London, Rome, places I love to go. But I love meeting the fans. And what I've realized is, because of the technology, the theatrical release, and then the video generation, and then the sophistication of the video generation with box sets and the making of, and then the DVD generation and the Blu-ray and the box sets of those. And throughout all of this, the burgeoning cable industry and marathons for Halloween and being on, you know, Showtime Extreme or HBO Extreme, or being in, you know, being able to see all of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise and other great horror movies in the horror menu on Apple TV or Prime Video or Netflix, to be able to delve into these. It's generated, this technology has generated, I think I'm on my third generation of fans now.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing. And there are some countries that are still playing catch up. We're huge in Latin America now. Latin America loves horror. And so that's a thing. And then other cultures have always embraced it. The Spanish love horror, and the Italians, and they respect it. It's, you know, in America for a long time, we all had to sit at the crappy table back by the revolving doors in the commissary. You know, we were not the A-list guys, you know, but we saved after we saved four or five studios, you know. Yeah. I think Friday the 13th saved Paramount at one point.
Absolutely.
I know that Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, and Star Wars saved Fox. And I know that New Line Cinema is the house that Freddie built.
Yeah.
So after that, we started getting a little respect. Now, every week, there's a horror or a sci-fi movie in the top 10 and on television, too. So we have sort of replaced the cowboy movie, the Western, or the gangster movie with Jimmy Cagney, you know. And we've sort of, we're sort of another main part of the menu: horror, science fiction, rom-coms, action films, fantasy films. These are, this is sort of the menu now in entertainment. And then you have reality TV as well. But I think what, I literally we're on our third generation of fans. I don't specifically feel a louder drumbeat for Nightmare on Elm Street now. It's an anniversary year, I believe, for Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Dream Warriors, which is, I think, if you took a poll, I think it's actually the fan favorite. And so I am feeling the vibe from that, Dream Warriors. And if they ever did a remake, that's the one I'd like to cameo in. You know, maybe playing the psychiatrist or the therapist who doesn't believe in,
ooh, I can see that.
In a collective nightmare, yeah. Children, you can't possibly be having the same dream. I think that it was wonderfully portrayed in the original by Amy Irving's mother, Priscilla Pointer.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of both of them. I remember seeing Priscilla on stage on one of my first trips to New York, and Amy, of course, we all had a crush on Amy, including Steven Spielberg, I believe. But gosh, I remember Amy from The Fury and Carrie, you know, so wonderful, such a terrific actress. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, that's, I think it's just the technology has given this afterlife and this access now to so many great films that didn't get the hype or didn't get the attention when they were released theatrically. Sooner or later, I think talent will out, and I think the audiences will discover them,
yeah,
deep down the rabbit holes of the internet or on Apple TV's rabbit hole or on Netflix's or Prime Video's or wherever they're looking on demand, wherever they're exploring.
Oh, totally.
Find another movie that William Finley is in, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting that you brought up the anniversary of Nightmare on Elm Street 3, because I feel like Stranger Things does have that vibe of these kids coming together to fight this evil. If they were going to remake that, or if that was going to be the idea of a launching point, is there a filmmaker out there you think could tackle that other than the Duffer Brothers right now?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you who I would love to see him freshen it up. Just freshen it up. Jordan Peele.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Just, and not just diversity for diversity's sake, but I really think he's truly, like Wes Craven, respects the genre. Mm-hmm. And I love what he's done so far, but I think he might really find a way into the back door, so to speak, of Dream Warriors and really play with it and have some fun.
Oh yeah. Eventize it for sure. Well, Robert, thank you so much for talking to us. This is great. I am absolutely jealous of the room behind you, including the pinball machine. thank you so much for everything.
I'm not even one of the victors on that. You know, all my kids and nephews and nieces, they're all much better at it than I am. I tilt way too much.
Yeah. I just love what they look like. I usually
yeah, they're pretty cool.
They're cool. But so are you, and keep it cool, and we'll hopefully talk soon in the near future. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Well, there you have it. Mr. England, Mr. Creel, Mr. Krueger himself.
I keep calling him the Fred Man himself. I don't think anyone's ever referred to him as that. I keep confusing people.
What if you said that right in the start of the interview? He's just like, all right.
So, Fredman, what? What are your thoughts on? That was a blast. Yeah. A total blast. I'm glad we could share that with everybody.
He's a joy. Again, we really hope that we can get him on. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities down the road. I mean, I don't want to be too hopeful just because I feel like anytime we do with these major franchises, we're inevitably disappointed. But I mean, the tea leaves out there scream Elm Street. People want Elm Street back. I know there's been a lot of talk about how Warner Brothers, who owns the rights because it's through New Line and New Line is absorbed by Warner Brothers, I believe they've in the past said they've been focusing more on the Conjuring franchise. You know, we saw where Conjuring goes in part 3 last year. Maybe, fingers crossed, they finally sit back and go, all right, look, there's been a lot of talk after Stranger Things 4, you know, a lot of hubbub online. People want it. They want to go back. They want to start dreaming again. Maybe we get it happen. I would love it.
Well, you know, Robert said himself that he's wants someone to breathe some new life into this thing. I can see them folding in Nightmare on Elm Street into the Conjuring universe. I want to see old Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga take on Freddy.
Yeah. Maybe it's like Poltergeist, which, you know, they'll all like gather around the living room and they'll, you know, Nancy will
maybe they'll capture him in some kind of talisman that they can put in their oddities room.
That could be interesting.
With Annabelle and the rest.
I'm wondering I guess it would be the glove, right? That it would have to be the glove.
That would be great. Or the hat, right?
The hat.
Dirty brown hat pulled through the dream.
What if it was something really obscure? Just a spatula from when he was grilling. And Freddy's dead.
we've captured him in this this random tool from the shed in which he put his gloves together.
Oh, God. It's just like the most like downer of like, reach. Okay, I guess that's it. All right, there's Freddy. Well, this is fun. We got a lot coming up. What do we got? Well, we're going to hell, which I guess technically is where Freddy is. We're going to Drag Me to Hell, specifically, because we're going to be talking about Sam Raimi's 2009, what'd you call it? It's not a creature feature. It's a supernatural horror film. That's it. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a return to horror.
Yeah. You know, maybe we call it Evil Dead 4, maybe we don't. You'll have to listen to find out. I think we recorded for like around 2 hours and 30 minutes, a big episode, so... Get ready for that. And then, look, I mentioned Poltergeist just a second ago. We're doing a deep dive on Poltergeist also. Well, the time we're recording this, we actually haven't recorded that episode yet. So I don't know how long that will go, but I assume it's going to be a pretty epic episode.
It's going to be a good one.
It's going to go on for a while. So we're going to be talking everything that ties together with Poltergeist. It's going to be like, we're going to gloss over the, you know, talk about the Night Sky script. We're going to talk about, you know, the Hooper versus Spielberg debate. I'm certainly going to talk about Joe Beth Williams, hopefully rein myself in. But that'll be something to look forward to. In the meantime, right now, you can go to our patreon.com/Halloweeniespod and get our Darkman commentary because we just recorded that. And that was fun. A star-studded Darkman commentary, I would say.
Oh, yeah. A couple of guests dropped by.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a little, definitely... a very irreverent commentary. And then at the end of the month, we're going to Amity because we're going to be dropping our full commentary for another Spielberg classic, Jaws. So, yeah, already a controversial statement right there. But that's fair because he produced Poltergeist.
Yeah, he produced it. Screenplay. I mean, you know, you can say that. It's okay.
It makes sense.
We're not making any declarations here.
No, not at all. Mac, we got to sign off, but because we're still in like the season 2 mode, we've been using the bumpers from God way back in 2019. I do not remember the sign off for is it like 1-2 Freddy's coming to? I can't remember it now. I honestly cannot remember the sign off for season 2. So
I'm racking my brain right now and
I know I can't.
Why think of wasn't it? Why wasn't it that?
Let's just do that. Let's just do that.
I know what it is.
What was it?
It's whatever you do.
Oh.
Don't fall asleep.
There you have it. Believe in my dream for me, and we'll break the mold. We'll break the mold.
This is the end of our show. For now. We hope you enjoyed this production. If you like our programming, consider searching for other bloody disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.